Welcome to the CRA Resource Show. CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with a single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies all across North America. And my name is Angela Roberts. I am head of recruiting here at CRA Resources. And today we're sitting down with one of my favorite podcasters, Lyle G. Lyle is a super special guest to us. Is this six? Five?
Yeah, I want to say five or six, sounds like. Yeah, we're in that neighborhood. Yeah.
So
they're so fun. They're so fun. They just blend. They blend.
They blend to each other. So, and for all of you that haven't heard about Lyle yet, he is the president of G Farm Consulting. But before we get started, for all of you guys that aren't that familiar with us, check out our blog at CRAresources.com/blog. You can catch up on all of the latest podcasts, roundtables, blog posts, etc. You can also sign up right there on the blog and receive all these goodies right to your inbox. So, Lyle, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for keep having me. I keep tricking my way in the door and y'all keep letting me in. So, hey, I'm happy about that.
Well, before we started recording, I was telling Lyle while I was behind, and so for the audience, just so you guys know, he and I did, I think our last podcast recording was towards the end of April, wasn't it? It's like 21st, somewhere around there.
That sounds right.
And right after that recording, I woke up one morning and my eye was just so incredibly swollen and just really irritated. And I have dry eye. A lot of women do. A lot of men do too, but I had LASIK years ago and it kind of feeds into it, I think. And so I've already got the ointments and the goo and stuff that I put in my eye before I go to bed. But this was just one of those situations to where it was just really uncomfortable. And as the day went on, it got worse. Well, I had to run out to the bank, go to the bank, I'm in the car, and I go to just kind of push my lips together. You know, you just do, right? And my mouth felt funny. It wasn't moving. And so I was like, holy cow, what is going on here? So I'm like driving down the road. I'm sticking my tongue out to myself in the rearview mirror. See if I'm having a stroke or something, right? You know, like, what is going on here?
So many of the people that are listening, right, that were former nurses or healthcare professionals are like, are you doing the stroke self-assessment? Are you doing it, you know?
Yeah, sticking my tongue out at myself and doing all this stuff. And so I get back home from the bank and my husband's working downstairs and I go to tell him, I'm like, something is really going on here. And when I'm telling him what's going on, I'm slurring my speech. And I am like, what the hell? I promise you I have not gotten onto the wine yet. I swear to God I haven't had my cocktail. You know, but
it's 5 o'clock somewhere, Angela. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
I think it was only about 2. I wasn't quite there yet. But I'm like, something's really messy. I was a little scared, actually. And he's like, you know what? Your eyes are a bit swollen. Why don't you go up, put some ice, take a Benadryl, take an aspirin just in case you are having a stroke. And I was having this really sharp pain in the back of my neck. And I'm like, okay, well, let me just go do that. And so I put ice pack on the back of my neck and on my eyeball. And, you know, I took the Benadryl and the aspirin and everything. And the pain started going away and the swelling started going away. And I was like, okay, well, you know, okay. This is not getting worse. Maybe I'm fine. I woke up the next morning and the entire left side of my face was completely paralyzed.
Oh, so scary. So scary.
And I was like, and it was weird because I've had family members who have had stroke, but I thought, well, I don't know how it starts, you know? And so I told Roger, I was like, sweetheart, we I think we need to go to the emergency room. I think we need to head out to the emergency room. I mean, and so we go to Tallahassee Memorial and it was, they did a great job there in their emergency room. They actually have a stroke unit. And so they just took me right straight in and the doctor looked straight at me and he goes, I could tell you right now, you are not having a stroke. You've got Bell's palsy. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I'm glad I'm not having a stroke. They went ahead and did all the scans. They did all that stuff. They did really great. And he told me, he said, we see several cases a week of this and everyone always thinks that it's a stroke. And it's quite unfortunate because the left side of your face is completely paralyzed and will be so for a period of time. It's hard to tell how long. And he recommended, he said, most of the time I see 6 to 9 months before full recovery. And I'm like thinking, crap, because my eye wasn't blinking on its own. I mean, So anyway, it made me start thinking. And by the way, audience, if you care, I'm getting there. I'm getting my eyes blinking, you know, all that stuff. I'm good there, because my biggest concern was I couldn't talk plainly. And you know, you take vanity out of it, and I'm worried about my pie hole. I mean, I couldn't anything you drink rolled right back out of your mouth. You can't, you know. I mean, it's like this whole thing.
You've ever had oral surgery, right, or you had teeth pulled, and you're just drooling out one side of your mouth, right, and you don't know it's happening. Oh yeah, yeah,
I know. It's like, yeah, you really do have a drinking problem now. I mean, it's like.
You got to pour it from way up.
It's actually documented at this point, right? So, you know, but all jokes aside, I'm thinking about all my consultants. How do, and I thought this could be the topic, is as a consultant, this has to be your biggest fear, right? Because I felt horrible. I had the shooting pain was the inflammation, and it was causing all these issues. My face hurt, and all these side effects. And what if I had had a stroke? Thank God that I've recovered as well as I have, but I mean, this could have been a really big deal. And what about all of these consultants out there, you being one of them?
Yep.
How do you plan for something like this? Because if you're not working, you're not getting paid, are you?
That's right. That's right. So, and just for the audience, Angela, I have a minor injury compared to hers, right? So I tore a tendon in my middle finger on my dominant hand, my right hand. And Angela immediately is like, what happened to your finger? So it's funny because I went through a smaller version of this with the doctor. I was like, am I going to be able to type?
Yeah.
Because I'm an 80 to 90 character a minute touch typist, right? And I'm like, dude, my finger, this is, you know, I don't lay tiles. I don't build buildings, right? We don't build a thing, but typing on the keyboard and talking to people, right? These are two things that we do for our job. So
exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, but not to compare, but it's funny. We're both kind of have these little things.
But it's relevant, isn't it?
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean,
and it was a concern.
Know.
It was absolutely an anxiety concern for me, right? I'm into the doctor. I'm into the orthopedist. And I'm like, what are you going to do with this thing? And so he goes, it's fine. Stop being so dramatic. You'll be fine.
I know, right?
Right? You'll be able to type.
You big baby.
Yeah. He did. He really. No, seriously, no. I got to rub some dirt on it. Speech, right? Oh, my God. What's the matter with you people? So
walk it off.
Yeah. So, but it's interesting, right? Like what? So in terms of planning for, essentially planning for the unexpected, planning for an inability to work, whether that's through physical incapacity, whether that's through, you know, mental incapacity, whether that's through choice, if someone, you know, life circumstances, you know, dictate, hey, you know, I'm adopting a kid or I'm having a kid or I have parents. I mean, you and Angela and I are of an age, right? Taking care of your parents, aging parents,
exactly right?
So how does a consultant who's, you know, if I'm not working, if I'm not putting the hours in, I'm not getting paid, how do you kind of plan for that? That's kind of what I'm thinking.
I agree, because again, as a consultant, I know even starting this business, I left a well-paying job with IBM to go start this business knowing I wouldn't get a salary for a minute.
Yeah.
But I planned for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What if? I mean, what are the what ifs? How do you deal with it?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have contingency in place? And if so, how did you come up with what that contingency looks like?
So early on in my consulting career, I got a ton of good advice. I have been very fortunate through my consulting career that a lot of people have taken time, you know, to kind of just say, hey. And I ask a lot of questions. I'm really kind of nosy and intrusive as a human being, as you know. So, you know, you're like, Lyle, he's like a force of nature. We want him gone. But so curious. But I did ask a lot of questions. I listened to a lot of good advice, and I had a lot of good people that took time. And I've said this before, right? People that have taken a lot of time and interest and given me their attention, which I treasure that.
Right.
So, but one of the things that I heard very early on was set up a nest egg, right? Which is kind of a dumb, it's a very basic thing to say, but the way I interpreted was when possible, I try and put away a year's worth of living expenses. And
oh,
that's
wow,
in an account
year.
I do not, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, there's a privilege there, right? I get that, right? I'm a single person. My expenses are fairly low, except for racing the car, which is insane. But that's not a living expense, right? Like if I get to the point where I'm tapping into the rainy day fund and that year of funds, then you start making the cutbacks, you know? So it's some of it's budgeting, some of it, and I do, like I said, I get it's privilege, but I'm a pretty diligent saver. For the most part, but that's something that I had to learn because coming from a salaried position, you just kind of rolls in, you know,
right.
And if I need to take a day off, I take a day off and it's fine. And I have, you know, you have vacation hours, you have all that built in. So for me and consulting, right, pick what you're comfortable with, what you can do. I think what is an achievable level for a person. And if you're like, oh my God, a year, that sounds like so much money. I mean, yeah, it's a chunk of money. What can you do to have kind of these contingency plans and say, okay, don't start with a year. Start with 3 months of living expenses.
Right.
What does that look like, right?
Right?
Do it automatically. I was a terrible saver initially until I learned the joy of automatic withdrawals.
Yep. Exactly. Right? Have the direct deposit split into multiple accounts or something.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And these are not, at this point, these are not complicated financial instruments that you need to do, right? Mm-hmm. Almost any bank, almost any credit union is going to be able to just be like, hey, take this out of this, put it into this account, put this other one into the other one account. And then as the person, the discipline then becomes, don't dip into the savings, the rainy day fund, for fun stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
That exists. Don't touch it until you need it. And I promise you, you'll know when you need it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You so will have no other option.
That's right. So that's kind of one thing that I've tried to do to really kind of insulate myself and to be, you know, and full disclosure, right? The last year was rough for me. I had a contract that ended early in middle of the year, and it was hard. It was very, very challenging to find additional work through that period of time. So I was very fortunate. I was lucky that I had that, you know, I had that rainy day fund and that I had funded it. But yeah, no, it's because you never know. You never
know.
I've been in industry. I've been consulting for 18 years now. And so I think I'm moderately savvy, I hope. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just stupid lucky. Who knows? But I, you know, like.
Or a combination of both.
Who knows? Could be some from A, could be some from B. Who knows? But I do think that normally you can kind of get a sense of when a contract's running out.
Yeah.
Right? I think as a consultant.
Or if they're in trouble and it might.
Yeah,
end,
absolutely. I think for the most absolutely. Part, mm-hmm. I think people, you know, that's the inner voice, right? And I think you do this for a couple of years, you kind of get a sense. I had no idea the contract was being cut or that my contract was going to end at a certain, I just was presuming it was going to get re-upped, but it came around the contract time and they're like, nope, we have different needs. So.
Yeah.
So it happens.
I love your advice. Even as a kid, I remember, and I don't know if schools still teach this, but the life skill classes that you used to go to or that we used, and they always said, make sure you've got 6 months of buffer. Yep. But especially, you know, whenever you get married, especially, you know, you got a spouse and if something happens and he gets laid off and you've got to be able to live off one income for a minute, do you have enough to be able to make sure? And then you got to worry about your debt load and, you know, all this stuff. I mean, it can get complicated, but the reality is you need to have that buffer where you can. You know. But
I don't remember a little bit, right? And having a spouse, I think that's even a bit of a buffer, right? I'm a single person. So having a spouse is, I want to say there's a benefit. There can be financial benefits to that. There's financial risks as well, right? And so, but
I think
if they're
not a man child and they don't spend the money that you don't have, I mean, it just kind of depends on your situation.
People are going to marry who they're going to marry, man. I'm not going to get involved in that, but you're right. Like I think that's a good point, which is be realistic. What is that? You know? So if one of the two of you, like if you were, you know, and I'm not going to, so if one spouse, if you were the primary breadwinner and you're not working, what does that mean? Right.
I agree.
So in my opinion, it requires a very kind of blunt, direct conversation in the family, whether that's, you know, an N of one or an N of two or an N of whatever. Right. What does this mean? Because there is a great uncertainty and you can't just assume, you know, it's like people who assume their house is going to appreciate 10 to 12% a year. That's impossible. That's not how math works. But so many people believe that, you know, that history is fixed. That this trip
or that
is
you'll
fixed. And
you'll have enough money in the account to pay it off when the balloon payment hits, right? I mean, I agree. You have to have and I'm very fortunate. My husband right now is very financially savvy. My first husband was a nightmare, and and so you have to be real. You got to be real with yourself, and you need to hide the money because you know. I don't know. I mean, you need to be
whatever
real with yourself for sure. Yeah, to make sure you're protected.
But I think. And I think that that's it, right? And it's, you know, many of us are, if you're a CRA, if you're a project manager, if you've done that kind of work, we're really good at contingency planning in our jobs. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what we do for a living.
Yep.
It is shocking to me how challenging that can be for some people to use in their personal lives.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
And I was one of those people. Like, I was absolutely one of those people when I first got into the industry, right? It was, you know, I kind of had a feeling of like, well, you know, I just set my tools down at the end of the day and I don't want to think about how to plan stuff. I don't want to, you know, it's like people who are like, I have a lot of my friends that work in kind of alternate healing, massage therapy, holistic healing, stuff like that. And they're like, I don't want to give massages after work. Right. I do this all day.
Right. Well, yeah. But I'm with you. I mean, it's an adult thing to do. And there has to be a certain amount of emotional intelligence to understand that if you don't plan, you're going to be sorry at some point.
Yes. As we
say, because it's not magical.
Hope is not a strategy.
No, it is not. No. But here's another question. So you plan, and I've seen this, and I've got friends, you know, that have planned, and then they're a year into their job search, and they've used all of their contingency. It's all gone.
Yep.
What would you say about I had another podcast recording this morning with a lovely gal. I can't wait for hers to drop. Her name is Alicia Moore. And one of the things that she says she does, which I just think is amazing, is that whenever she looks at someone's resume, if they're having a hard time finding a position, she looks to see what problem, because a lot of times it's obvious in a resume is that they're really good at a certain thing. And then she helps to coach them into, well, you know, you solved this unique problem. What's stopping you from pivoting into this type of thing or doing this type of a contingency or maybe being a consultant here? You don't even have to be an entrepreneur full time, but, you know, maybe be able to pivot.
Yeah.
Because even as a permanent employee, there's no guarantee. You'd like to think there is. You like to think you're going to get that paycheck every single week or month or whatever, but it's not guaranteed. So what happens when the contingency you have built, if you've built it, is gone?
Yes. I think that is a fantastic question. And I think it impacts a lot of people. I can speak for myself. You know, I think that so for me, you know, I've reached to a certain level of competency in clinical research, right, in our industry. And I think it can be very difficult. I think it's pride. I think it can go back, you know, like people kind of put their blinders on or they're proud of, because like, listen, man, I've worked X years in this industry, X decades to get to a certain level, right? I'm not going to accept anything that's not that level. I'm worth that, right? Mm-hmm. Which is true. You are worth that value. But that means that you really, you know, as you go up the pyramid, right, the pyramid tapers and tapers and tapers. There's less positions as you get higher. That's the nature of things. So I find that people get very proudly stubborn, right? I've gone through this myself, different periods of my career. I'm like, you know, especially kind of when I kind of went from manager to director level, I was like, well, okay, I made this big step, you know, I'm not going back. Well, no. That's funny. You know, Lyle, that's funny. The universe finds that very humorous. We're going to punch you right in the – I'm, you know, the universe is going to metaphorically punch you in the face, right? Yeah. How does that feel? So it's – I think there's a lot of that, and I think it's – and I'm a huge fan of empowerment. I'm a huge fan of people being paid what they're worth. I think that that's kind of common in the industry. There's an opposite side to this coin, which is, you know, people don't understand their value, and that's, I think, a different conversation, right? Yep. But I think that the reality is – or the reality check then becomes, yes – when things are working normally, when the situation is normal, when the economy is normal, I'm worth X, okay? And I'm holding my hand up pretty high for the people online. at a certain point, that's not where the industry is at in our current reality.
It does change. It's changed.
It changes.
It is changing now. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that can be a big challenge for a lot of people is to be like, yes, to feel – all this time they've been getting these positive values and getting this positive feedback. Hey, you know, you're worth X. You're worth X, right? Your work is really good. You're great at what you do. Fantastic. Taking less than that in a contingency does not devalue you or your what you've put in or your skills or your work. It's more of acceding to the reality that exists on the ground.
Yeah.
And so – and I think – and Angela, I don't know. I'd love to hear your experience on this, but I think people get kind of locked in.
They do. And they feel like they're being taken advantage of. And I think, and here's the other thing that happens is people talk to each other out in the field. And I will tell you right now, if someone tells you how much they're making, they're lying. It doesn't even matter what they've told you.
Liar!
It's not true. It's always a lie.
You're not making $400 an hour as an oncology CRA? What are you doing wrong? What the hell's the matter with you?
Always a lie. And so you got to go do your own real homework with real benchmarking and with people who understand what the industry is. And you can't talk to your buddies and believe them.
That's right.
And you know, you can't. You just can't do it because there's always a lot of things that are like playing into that.
Yes. Yes. That's such a good point. That's so funny. I want to tell you a good resource that I have found is recruiters.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have a recruiter that you trust, like CRA resources, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely ask that person because they see across the board that there's no bullshit, right? Like they'll tell you, hey,
exactly,
man,
right.
Because,
yeah.
And it's interesting, I find, and I'm sorry for interrupting. I think that some people from my side, right? Non-recruiters, kind of the consultants or whatever, we feel like that the agencies are just, oh, well, the agencies are just, they're lowballing us, right? They're screwing
well,
us
a
over.
A lot of
I'm
them
like,
do. A yeah. lot of them do.
And that's unfortunate, yeah. right? But I think mm-hmm. that if you have an agency, if you have agencies that you trust and you trust the people you work with, you get a good vibe, they'll let you know, right? They'll let you know. Like, I talk to you guys and go, hey, you know, what are you guys seeing for average rates? Because you see a broad slice, right? Me as a consultant, me and my buddies sitting in the CRA lounge bullshitting, right? Talk, you know, blowing smoke. We don't have that kind of visibility that you guys have.
That's true. You see a bit of it, but here, but I, you're correct. Okay, this is important. I'm obviously having a hard time hearing my words because this is a really big point. There are a lot of really bad recruiting companies and people out there that are going to try to screw you on your rate. There's no doubt about that. And yeah. and I think if you're talking with a recruiter, your first question to them is, what is your rate structure? How do you determine the amount that you pay me and the amount that you bill your client?
Yep.
And if the recruiter is not willing to have that discussion with you, do not share your credentials with them. Don't give them your resume. Don't give them permission to represent you because they're sleazeballs. Transparency is extremely important because I've seen these agencies. They will try to needle a CRA as low as they will go, and they will still bill the client as yep. much as they can bill them. Because here's what, you guys, all that you guys are listening, my CRAs get a commission based off the profit, which is the difference between what we bill the client and what we pay the CRAs. They get commission yep. on that. And
which
if they
nice.
Can get that profit huge, they get a bigger commission.
Yeah.
And what you're looking for is you're looking for a recruiter that does a flat markup like we do.
Yep.
Our markup is a certain percentage. We're happy to tell you what it is when we talk to you. I tell the clients what it is. Sometimes they even bake it into the contract because
yep.
we are so transparent. And when you do that, then that means that they're being transparent with you, but they're also being fair.
Yes.
Because now you're on equal grounds with everybody else, not due to your negotiation skills, not due to your desperation, but due to your skills and qualifications. And so if you're worth $125 an hour as an oncology CRA, you're going to be offered $125 an hour as an oncology CRA because we're going to be billing the client X percentage higher than that. And that
yeah.
is really, really important thing to know about recruiters.
That's a huge point, and I wish we could underline this even. I mean, it's so, and that's some, because it's something that as a consultant takes time to learn, like to mm-hmm. understand the business of staffing, right?
It is. Yeah.
And if you don't know that, I'm fortunate in that there's a guy here, and I live in San Diego. There's a guy here in San Diego I've worked with for years as a recruiter on and off, both as from the industry side as well as the consultant side. You know, so I've been a client as well as a component. An asset, I guess.
An asset.
Yeah, yeah. And so I've had the opportunity to have these conversations, but I talked to other CRAs, I talked to other consultants, and they have no idea how the system works.
They have
no freaking idea, right? And so you tell them that. These guys are the same way as you, Angela, by the way. They run flat rate. They're like, listen, here's our percentage, right? This mm-hmm. is our spread. This is our delta.
Yep.
And as the rates go up and down, your rate goes up and down, and we keep our delta exactly consistent, right?
That's it.
That's how they operate their business. And yep. so – it's, and like you said, very transparent, but so many CRAs don't understand that. And so, you know, so getting back to kind of our earlier point about people feeling like they're getting taken advantage of, people feeling like they're, you know, I'm a bad negotiator. People are just going to undercut me, right? I'm not confident as a negotiator. Well, and so, and that's why maybe I'm not willing to take these, what I would consider, you know, lower paying jobs or lesser jobs, not understanding that you guys are doing a flat rate. That's where the industry is.
That's what it's demanding right now.
That's the demand yeah. is at Y, and yeah. this is the reality. So for guys like you, and so as a consultant, asking those business questions, asking those specific questions, and immediately seeing, and as you said, Angela, right? So many good things in that chunk. I love it. Because it was something, this as a consultant to me was entirely new. It was incredibly eye-opening to see how that worked, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a staffing company, and please correct my details, but, you know, so let's say a staffing company, they offer you $100 an hour, right, mm-hmm. as a CRA. But what you don't know as the CRA is that they're getting, like, they're charging out $170.
They might
okay,
be.
To the yeah. client, potentially, right? That's mm-hmm. a gigantic spread. That's yeah. a gigantic spread in the industry.
It's a huge percentage.
And right.
To me, that's an unethical percentage.
Absolutely.
Because,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You could be paying your monitors $130. and that's still right. getting a big old spread, right?
Yeah. So and by the way, you're the one out in the field doing the heavy lifting, so right. you should be the one getting the 130, and we're just handling the overlay and the brokerage right. and the relationships and making sure everybody's happy and all that right. stuff. Now, I'm not trying that, to undercut what we
and
do.
That has value. We that bring entirely a lot of has value to absolutely. The table. Absolutely.
But with that being said, you're the one in the day-to-day, and you deserve yeah. to be aligned with an agency that appreciates that.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's yeah. interesting. And so many people don't get that. So mm-hmm. going back to kind of the conversation, the pivot about and how do you know that value? How do you know what a fair rate is, right? Again, get with an agency like you guys.
A niche recruiting company.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Get connected to people that you trust. Get connected to recruiters who you can just have that one-on-one with and that you know. And I think a great, you know, Angela, your points, again, I love everything about that because it's such a black box for so many consultants, especially really newer is. Ones, right? Especially yeah. newer ones. And it's hard to find an agency with which you can have that kind of conversation because the model, you know, there's some sketchy stuff out there, man.
There really is. There really is. And if you've got a recruiter who's reaching out to you with a Gmail address, definitely run towards the hills. But you know what? Again, if you're thinking about pivoting and if you are in a lot of trouble and you've been looking and looking and looking, I see a lot of posts on LinkedIn that say, don't work with an agency. Go straight. But I don't want people coming to me straight because I got yeah. no time for that nonsense, right? I mean, look yeah. at it this way. I mean, if you're thinking about pivoting, you need to align yourself with your network. And we've touched on this before, but this is where having, and I know if Becky were here, she would be like saying, we are running out of time. But this is where you've got to have a strategy for your job search, because yeah. again, from a pivot perspective, you need to understand A, how to represent the pivot, because, and it's not because I've applied to 1,000 jobs and no one's interviewed me. It's got to be something different than that, right? Yep. But then you got to have a job search strategy. So maybe that could be like another part, because maybe that yeah. could be our next podcast, because I would love to sit down with you to give our audience an idea from your perspective, not from mine, but from your perspective, how you map out your day mm-hmm, mm-hmm. with your job search strategy. If you were going mm-hmm. to do an application here, how does that impact who you send connection requests to today? What kind of posts you do today? How you tailor your application? Do you have numbers you go by? Do you have button share 8 to 5, even if you're just looking for a job and not working a project? I mean, all right. of that, I think right. people fall short, because when I ask people what their job search strategy is, they say, to get a job.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, yeah. that is the result you want.
That's the goal. That's not the process. That is not the process.
It's not the same thing. And you got to have a strategy, don't you?
Yeah. And I will say, just as a kind of a preface to that, and not to go in detail, right? But I think consulting firms that you trust, I understand as a consultant, I understand the desire to go direct with a sponsor, to direct with someone, right? Because there's a material benefit.
Right.
You know, the theory then becoming, hey, you don't have to pay so-and-so X percent. You're paying that back to me. The downside of that is, right, or the advantage to using a recruiting firm, it's a force multiplier. I have a pretty good network after doing this, been in industry for 26 years, whatever. I've been doing this a million years. I'm an old, I know, when dinosaurs ruled the earth. But my network is nothing compared to a recruiter's network. A recruiter's, your job, one of your big jobs is to meet people, connect people, know who needs what at what time, right?
That's exactly right.
Your people do that full time, Angela. I can't possibly do that full time. Even if I, you know, so even if I have a quote unquote great network, I'm not cultivating it nearly to the level that your folks are doing, right? So to me, one of the things you do if you need to work, go with consulting firms, because they're force multipliers. They massively expand your network.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And if you do want, especially like, for example, if we're talking about CRAs or clinical operations management or director of clinical ops, anything within the operational realm, yeah. is get with an agency that specializes in that realm. And I don't want to go on record to say that you're soup to nut. Agencies aren't good. I mean, those agencies right. that place everything under the sun, but make sure they've got a really good, robust section that focuses in clinical research, because here's the benefit. When we talk to you, we're looking at every position in San Diego area that you would qualify for. And sometimes when we talk to candidates, there's like five or six jobs they could apply to through us.
Yeah, that's
we're
right.
representing that's right. them. And then our clients know that we're only sending candidates over who have passed our qualification process, and they don't have to filter through the fraudulents, the mediocres, or the whatevers. Mm-hmm. It saves them time.
Yeah, it absolutely saves them time. And I think another good point that I'd like to kind of emphasize in that conversation is that, what is the easiest way to get a job? What is the easiest way to get your CV recognized by a company? Know a person at that company, right? Exactly. Have someone say, oh, that Lyle guy, yeah, I've worked with him, or I know someone who's worked with him, and have someone vouch for you. Want to know what a recruiting agency can do? If you have a relationship with a recruiting agency, they're vouching for you.
Agreed.
Right. You're not just resume 272 in the stack. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, we had Lyle on a couple different contracts. He did a good job. He's a crazy person, but he still works OK.
But that, you're gonna love him. You're gonna...
30% of the time you'll love him. 10% of the time you'll hate him. 40% or 6% of the time it's neutral. But it's, you know, but I think that is very important, because how many times, especially when you're talking about, you know, just blind sending in a blind CV through a LinkedIn link, great, right? You will every once in a while get looked up. I'll tell you what will increase your odds. If the hiring manager on the side of that sponsor goes, oh, right, Angela Roberts, I've known Angela for 30 years. You know, I've known Angela for so long. She sent me so many good candidates, and she's sending me this guy, Lyle, right? Like, you get to essentially be in that, you get to be enveloped by that, you know, by that recommendation, for lack of a better word.
So. I love it. I think it's a great point. And again, you know, candidates, you can ask these agencies. All of us have KPIs. We all have metrics. How many submits to interview? How many submits to hire? We track it, because we don't want to waste our – I mean, you do have those agencies that will just do a bomb drop of like 20 resumes on a client. And then the client has to sort through the 20 and pick the top. We only send the top. So if you're getting represented by us, you're getting that we've known Lyle for years and his references are glowing and his this, that, or the other. And it does matter.
Yeah, it
really does. I would say 80% of the candidates that we represent actually win an interview.
That's awesome.
About
which
80%.
Is a fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think so. So just, you know, things to remember for folks that are listening to this, right? There's a lot going on behind the scenes if you're a newer consultant that you need to ask about. I shouldn't say you need to. It will help you be a more effective business person in your consulting work. You could be a great CRA and just be bad at the business part. That to me is not a personal failing at all, right? You know, that's not saying, oh, this CRA can't do anything business. No, we just don't get taught any of that, right?
Right.
Nowhere in our career, you know, so I started as a monitor. I started in DM, and then I went through monitoring, went into, you know, into study management, program management, stuff like that. Nowhere in that trajectory was there a discussion about how to market yourself. Nowhere in that trajectory was, how does staffing work? Unless you've actually staffed at a sponsor, how would you know these things?
Exactly.
So it's not a failing in any of the people, right? It's just a lack of knowledge, right?
I
learned how staffing worked a couple different ways. I was working at a small company, so I actually had to do some staffing stuff. And man, let me tell you, eye-opening, right? It was eye-opening. And then I have colleagues that, you know, that work for staffing agencies and run them and stuff like that. So, but we don't get trained in that stuff. Nothing in our business career, nothing in our corporate career would have us know these things. So I think if people are like, oh, well, you know, they feel bad, they don't know, you know, I should know all this. No, there's no should.
No.
Right? There's no way you would know this stuff unless you specifically reached out to people like Angela, to places like CRA Resources, to, you know, to companies that you trust, to staffing folks that you trust to give you that information. Otherwise, how the heck would you know it? It's unreasonable to expect it.
Which just means that as a business owner, a CRA that's an independent or a clinical consultant in general, is you now have to have partners in your life that know the areas that you don't know. Why would you waste your time learning that? Just engage with someone that can help you and can be honest with you, which really works full circle back to our contingency plan, because again, this goes further than just having Bell's palsy and not being able to work full time for several weeks or not being able to do anything because your face is paralyzed, right? This is bigger than that. This is, yes, you need to plan for that, but you also need to plan for the lulls, for how do you understand that the hourly rate, the compensation is completely tanked in the last 6 months? How would you know that? How do you know that you're not the only one that's getting laid off because Icon is blowing up everybody and et cetera, right. et cetera, et cetera? How do you know that? You've got to have a plan to be able to surround yourself with the resources, whether that be financial contingency, agencies, network, whatever it is, so that you've got a risk mitigation plan for point A, point B, point C.
Yep, that's right. You know, we're experts at certain things in clinical yep. research, right? But it's impossible to be an expert at everything. Mm-hmm. It really Agreed. Is, right? You just can't. So what do? You find good people that you trust. You partner with them.
I agree. Lyle, yeah, I appreciate you being on today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I would love to schedule another one to talk about your job search strategy. I really think that would help a lot of people for sure. So
yeah, I'm on board,
hopefully,
man.
You'll come back. So
as I've said before, whenever y'all let me, whenever I trick my way in the door, I'm happy to come.
Well, we love having you. And for all of you guys out there, thank you so much for listening. And we absolutely understand you've got a lot of options when it comes to working with recruiting agencies. I mean, we talk about how great we are, but you've got to figure that out for yourself. And we do take pride in working with the highest quality, both the clients and the candidates. So feel free to reach out. You can come right straight to CRAresources.com. Reach us through any of the contact forms. We are happy to help.